What's up, you guys? Sean Ross at Fightful Select. It is the Fightful Report podcast for December 29th, 2024. Getting this out a day early. Got back from New York yesterday. Covered AEW World's End. Did the MSG show as well. Had some scoops along the way at MSG in New York. All that stuff. Back to our regular schedule now. AEW World's End. That was the big show this weekend. Fightful Select had a couple of scoops come to fruition. We had been reporting about Kenny Omega's return, specifically that he was expected to return to AEW before his Wrestle Dynasty match against Gabe Kidd. Not only that, this past week we reported that he would be back at AEW World's End. That did happen. He is set to take off for Japan on January 1st, so I wouldn't necessarily expect him to appear on this Dynamite simulcast, but we'll see how that goes. But Kenny Omega back in the fold, hopefully that they get him involved ASAP, because, I mean, man, since he lost that championship to Hangman Page just a couple of years into AEW, we're looking at over, 3 years, probably about 37 months since that happened in November 2021, and since then he's had 39 matches. That's an average of about 13 a year. He was averaging 2-3 times that much per year in AEW before that. So obviously we hope that he stays in the ring. Adam Copeland back as well. Writing was kind of on the wall with that one, as FTR had said that they weren't coming alone to Asheville, and he was brought back. They're doing the rated FTR thing now. But he's been good to go for a while, as he outlined on the post-show scrum, but he had been cleared for wrestling activity, but it made sense for him to come back at this show, give them a little bit of a boost heading into the AEW Max era. There were so many people backstage at AEW World's End that did not appear on the show. I had mentioned Bryan Danielson. He is still working with AEW in some capacity. He did the AEW All In ticketing event recently that I did an interview with him at, which you'll see on Fightful sooner than later. Julia Hart was at the show. The Guns were at the show. Nick Wayne was also at the show, even though he wasn't used on television. Lots of people within AEW that were there but didn't appear on the broadcast. However, there were also a number of names that Fightful Selected reported outside of the company that were there. AJ Francis, an interesting one. He is a free agent on January 1st. He has been talking with TNA, but they have not reached a new deal or anything like that. He was seen talking with Tony Khan ringside before the show. He's gotten high marks within TNA as well, but he also talked with Swerve Strickland, Prince Nana, Jeff Jarrett. In addition to that, Baron Corbin, a.k.a. Tom Peacestock, was there. He said he was just enjoying the show, but he's not contractually eligible to appear anywhere for at least another month anyway. Then Tyler Breeze was there. Now, Tyler Breeze, I don't know if he's still under some sort of WWE deal, but he basically just wrestles when he wants to. He is successful completely outside of pro wrestling, I think with some investment properties and the like. He's got a wrestling school that does very well with Sean Spears as well, Flatbacks. But he was also at the show. I haven't heard of AEW having particular interest in any of them, but I do know that AJ Francis definitely did impress some people within TNA, especially compared to where he was a year ago and what they were expecting out of him. Baron Corbin is a guy that has an awful lot of friends in wrestling. I think that he'll be just fine with bookings if he wants to take some, especially considering how he performed at the end of his run. Interesting note on a New Japan contract. Now, there's going to be a lot of details on New Japan contracts coming up soon, but there's one that looked like it was going to expire at the end of the month in January, but as it turns out, it's up in a couple of days. Kevin Knight, who is a current IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champion, his deal is up very soon, and New Japan wants to negotiate with him and extend him. He's been used by TNA a couple times in the past, but I've heard of other companies in the United States that have at least discussed the possibility of using him and where he might fit. He's a guy that I would imagine is probably going to get some interest. Now, I don't know if he's going to re-sign with New Japan or if he's wanting to make a move over there, but 6 feet tall, 200 pounds, looks great, fantastic wrestler, has shown that he can work singles and tag. I would be surprised if he does not get some looks from some people. Nigel McGuinness, he made a couple of surprises in 2024 as a pro wrestler. Two surprise appearances, and then he wrestled Bryan Danielson as well. He returned to the ring at AEW All In as a participant in the Casino Gauntlet match, and this was a year after he had sort of prepared to come back, and there wasn't really a spot for him on that show, but he's maintained great shape throughout all of 2024. But the appropriate match didn't happen last year. He ended up having a few spots this year, including an ROH final battle match. Now, I asked about his in-ring status after ROH final battle, and I was told not to expect that to be his last match. I wasn't given any specific creative or anything for Nigel McGuinness, but he's going to keep on doing commentary as we see, and he's a valued member of that company. But I was just told that he is not expected to wrap up his in-ring career on that note. A reader did send along that he was sporting a finger injury recently from in-ring training. So he has kept it going with that. Jordynne Grace contract news. Now, I had said I don't think that 2025 will be as wild and high profile of a contract year as 2024. Now, that being said, you still have people like Jordynne Grace, Josh Alexander, the aforementioned Kevin Knight who are coming up. I think it's probably similar in number of contracts coming up. However, man, Jordynne Grace and Josh Alexander right off the bat, pretty big ones. Now, Josh Alexander's goes for a bit longer, but when I asked, I was told that Jordynne Grace's deal is set to run through the weekend of TNA Genesis, which is January 19th, 2025. She's scheduled to take on Tessa Blanchard at the show, which she did kind of push back on happening. But she is set to hit free agency after that. There is interest from WWE and outside companies, and she would be a free agent in time for the Royal Rumble. She's not the only one. Brian Myers' contract had originally went through 2024. However, I'm told that they have agreed on at least a short-term agreement extension through the TNA Genesis show to see what exactly they can do and to kind of keep that going. Their partnership has worked very well for both sides. Brian Myers has been a part of the system. He has been a decorated guy within that company and somebody that a lot of people like and look to as a good person to have in that locker room. Not related to this story, but I got to say this, man. The Major Figure Pod show that he does with Smart Mark Sterling and Matt Cardona, they do on every Christmas or Christmas season a complete history of, and like they've covered ECW figures, they've covered LJNs. This year they did Galoob, WCW. It's become a Christmas season tradition for me. I highly encourage you guys to check that out. WWE Holiday Tour Scoops. I was at Madison Square Garden for the December 26th show. There was no Rhea Ripley, there was no Drew McIntyre, there was no Rey Mysterio. That definitely did take a little bit of the marquee out of it. No Bo Dallas with the Wyatts, but Nikki Cross wrestled the 8-person tag match without her mask on, which was an interesting note there. CM Punk came out in the towel and shower cap to help Damian Priest fight off the heels. I was asked for some context on that. It's because he already had his match earlier in the night. They announced Raw coming back to MSG on March 10th. It's looking like TV in like the February, March months. It's going to be real hot overseas and at MSG. There were several from GCW in a suite at Madison Square Garden, including Brett Lauderdale, Nick Gage, and some others. They were handing out flyers outside the event. I went and visited them in the suite. It was a very good time. Raquel Rodriguez and Kofi Kingston were on the MSG show, even though they didn't wrestle on it. Rey Mysterio did join the Raw tour, quote unquote, after that, and ended up teaming with CM Punk to take on New Day, which went over really, really well. Now, a big question mark around this tour was that of Cody Rhodes, and people wondering, well, is he going to do this tour after he was quote-unquote written off? So obviously he appeared on SmackDown. He has been appearing on these house shows. We were able to confirm that he was added to the entire SmackDown loop. Like, it was never in question, never in doubt. Obviously, they were selling the angle, but they sold that angle more to make sense of them having a taped show after a title match that would have already aired than anything else. And it worked out great. The angle worked out fantastically, but Cody Rhodes was always planned for the SmackDown side of that tour. and was never going to take that off. They were never going to have him not work those shows. That was very important for that loop. MSG, a lot of times that can kind of sell itself. With Orlando, Jacksonville, and the like, he was always going to work those shows. I mentioned Rhea Ripley was not on the Raw side of things. I believe that her family had visited Orlando for the Christmas season show. So she ended up doing the Orlando show, did not do the Jacksonville show on December 26th, but she did join for the Orlando show. But man, the Raw side was quite interesting because Jey Uso was on the SmackDown tour. No Rey Mysterio for the first night. Again, no Rhea Ripley, no Drew McIntyre. So obviously our content this past week was a little bit different than usual because of Christmas, but I didn't want to leave you guys without stuff. So I posted a new episode of Figure Haul. We made a select exclusive, the Making a Finisher RVD Van Terminator edition, because it got thrown off of YouTube years after the fact. We did an edition of enhancement stories that I have had done for years at this point, where Anthony Bowens talks about his match with AOP. Also had the Duke the Dumpster making a finisher. Just some features, honestly, that didn't necessarily fit. I think we had or have an EC3 submission finisher one that he was going to do as well. But lots of cool different stuff if you all want to check it out. At the end of the year, we also took a look back at a match that was arguably a match of the year, or the match of the year, depending on who you talk to. But Will Ospreay, Swerve Strickland, they ended up having a very classic match at Forbidden Door. But it didn't feature like a New Japan versus AEW match for the title. But that's because Will Ospreay stepped up and he wanted to do it. He wanted to do this match. He felt it was important. There were no plans for him to win the world title within a year or anything. And he said, you know what? I want people to stop mentioning that. I want people to stop saying that. The original plan that was discussed was for Swerve to take on Yota Tsuji, who, you know, obviously an emerging New Japan talent, but not somebody that necessarily holds the same name value as a lot of bigger names in New Japan. At least in the States. In New Japan, perhaps so, but Tsuji ended up working on the 0 hour of Forbidden Door. A few other things that we dropped throughout the week. Bobby Lashley, I thought he would be on on World's End, so I released his interview. Thunder Rosa spoke to her at the Dallas All-In ticketing event. You're going to see some interviews from there and WrestleCade sprinkled in throughout all of January, as well as a couple from Down Under the Ring. They spoke with Kyle Fletcher and Darby Allin. And also one that we've had in the archives for a while, Joel Pearl talking to Trey Miguel, a text interview that we had done there. You'll see some of those articles rolling out throughout the week. Let's go ahead and talk about the Q&A. Lots of great questions. Let's jump into it, guys. Do you have any idea how long this Death Rider story will last? Well, I mean, it was originally supposed to last a very long time, like from now, at least a number of months. But I don't know if they will pivot now, as it seems the audience isn't as keen on it. Did CM Punk run out with a rubber ducky? Inquiring minds demand to know. He did not. SRS wanted to ask if there's any news on if Cody is moving to Raw or staying on SmackDown for the foreseeable future. I would imagine probably both. And a big part of that is, one, Netflix requested him. Netflix wants him on these upcoming shows. And through tomorrow, they have the holiday tour that wraps up in Detroit at Little Caesars Arena. But then after that, the live events are done. Like, they don't have any more until, gosh, March 15th when they're on the European tour. And we know that they're already doing TV over there. So it is not unreasonable to believe that they would be like, hey, Cody, we need you to work Mondays and Fridays, 2 days a week, not so bad, right? So I wouldn't doubt that they end up making that happen. Do you think Jordynne Grace will be with WWE in 2025, as I feel she deserves to be? She's been amazing in TNA for the last number of years, and this will be a little loss. I do think she'll be with WWE in 2025. I think that they have made it perfectly clear to her that they like her, that they want to use her. And I think that's probably where she'll end up going. She fits their presentation very well. They like her there. She's made good impressions since appearing there. Have you heard what the commercials will be like on Netflix, if it'll be just like they are now, or could it be formatted differently? It wasn't any different on the NFL show than it is formatted now, so I would imagine it will stay that way. What's going on with NWA? Seems like they are falling off the map. Well, I mean, here's the reality of the situation. The pandemic hit them really, really hard. Once upon a time, NWA, I thought, was one of the best shows going. It was really cohesive. It was good. Listen, Dave Lagana was there. He was a creative force. And in 2018 and 2019, I thought that they were just a really, really good show. Dave Lagana was cited, or I would say things reemerged during the speaking out movement, which he did deny, but he has been out of wrestling ever since. That really did affect NWA creatively. He was a creative driving force on that show, not just what you saw as terms of the wrestling product, but the production as well, the way that things were shot. I know that 10 Pounds of Gold and that series was very, very important to him, and he factored into that pretty heavily. That definitely affected things. The pandemic in general, it sort of, and it really shed a light on the fact that there was no long-term plan after that or anything like that. And again, pandemic ruined a lot of things. It is easy to forget that there was a point in time where the NWA roster, at the same time, mind you, had Ricky Starks, LA Knight, Eddie Kingston, Thunder Rosa, Nick Aldis, and almost all of them left around the same time there. And it was around the start of the pandemic. That really, really took a lot out of the NWA. You could have absolutely anchored that company to those four or five names and done something sustainable as an independent company. Like you put a lot of the financial investment into them, but it was not to be. They decided to anchor their show to, first off, Camille, I think, did very well as women's champion, but they anchored their show to Tyrus because he was on Fox News and got their title belt on TV a couple times. They decided to lean on basically people that had been in WWE in 2006 and hadn't wrestled for years at a time. That couldn't necessarily work as well anymore. They had a pretty particular vision that didn't quite work. Although I will say this, there have been a few things that have done really well for them over the last number of months. Like there's a ladder match with Eric Smalls and Rolando, who is a mini wrestler, Eric Smalls is a mini wrestler. And it did over 1 million views in the last couple of months. The Matt Cardona EC3 World Title Deathmatch, 600,000 plus views in the last year. EC3 Tom Latimer, 200,000 views in I think the last month or so. They had a clip that went viral recently with Natalia Markova where she sat on her opponent as she pinned her. It did an incredible amount of viewership. They put that as the thumbnail. Obviously, that's why. They've had a couple hits on like the YouTube algorithm and stuff. And I would like to give them their flowers because even though I don't think the show is consistently great or anything like that, a number of months ago, they ran a show. It looked like at a high school gym or something, but it was one of the best lit and best produced like high school gym shows that I've seen in a long time. Like, it looked really, really good. If you can go out and find it, it was a number of months ago. And I was kind of excited after that. I was like, okay, this looks really good. This is shot different. Like, we know it's in a high school gym. There ain't nothing wrong with that. I mean, a lot of their programming is black mat, black apron, black ropes, black ring posts, black turnbuckles, black mats outside. It's very drab in that sense. This one looked a lot different. And then they went back to the same old stuff, and it wasn't quite good. And the studio wrestling stuff that I just think looks really terrible, where in the background you can't see anybody. It's just a set. And it was nice. It had some novelty at the time, but it's That novelty's done. I want to say this. I'm glad that NWA exists. I'm glad that it's still around. I'll never wish it out of business or anything. I thought, a great interview with Billy Corgan a few years ago. I don't think that he ended up liking that interview because I was critical of Tyrus. But I thought it was a phenomenal interview. It's honestly one of my favorite ones. But I think his heart is in the right place. But man, there are so many things that I look at, and you know, maybe there's reasons, budget reasons or anything like that, that prevent it. But I would like to see some changes there, obviously, and maybe they're hamstrung in that sense. Do you have an update on Bronson Reed? Yeah, by his own admission, it's going to be a while before he's back, which is very unfortunate. Very unfortunate. Nick Gage is no longer signed with GCW, given Mox's heavy praise of him in the past. Do you think AEW will sign him? No, they won't. He doesn't fit in AEW, and also the pizza cutter spot costs them quite a few sponsors. I feel like the GCW signing was more of like a here's some security type of thing, just an honorary type of deal. No, I did see him the other day. He was at in the box, and he looked great, which is good to see. Any specific independent talent or free agent talent you've heard TNA going after in 2025? They don't necessarily have the leverage right now. They are kind of seeing where the chips fall, I would imagine. They're always thinking about people and considering bringing people in. But I think right now they kind of got to see where the chips fall and see who they can bring in. And I think you're going to see some people on the exclusive paid per appearance things. But those deals are really losing their luster in pro wrestling. Like, there's a lot of wrestlers smartening up and being like, what's the point? Is there more to the Ricky Stark story that you are aware of? He appears to have been poorly treated, taking up the option year and not being used when he said he wanted to explore free agency. If there isn't, as it appears to be, wrestlers would be right to reconsider AEW as a suitable destination. Listen, this one is so different than Penta and Phoenix, who were talking with other companies before they should have been able to. Miro, who a lot of people in AEW feel like isn't on the same creative page. Danhausen, who is fortunately now back, but there were some scheduling conflicts and miscommunications there. Ricky just said he didn't want to have his option picked up, and then they did and didn't use him. He would work. Like, he'd do the shows. It's his job to. He would have to. There's, in my opinion, there's not a lot of defense there in that for AEW side. I don't know why they haven't used him. It's puzzling to me that they haven't used him. And to me, I think the more that they don't use him, the hotter he's going to be when he does show up somewhere else. Steven says, this is probably internet gossip I shouldn't even entertain, but does Mercedes have any type of creative control control in her contract? No, not really. I think it's just, you know, reasonable influence and saying, oh, this would be cool, that would be cool, but I don't think creative control. I will say there have been a number of people in AEW that have just simply passed on creative ideas over the years that I think should probably not have that sort of say-so. Like, you're there to do a job, you do it. I have never heard of Mercedes as one of those, though. So, I know that there's a lot of people that claim that, but there were a lot of people that claimed that she was making $10 million and that there were people that claimed they had a payroll list with a bunch of journalists on it and all that crap. Like, come on. Wins and big matches matter in my fantasy WWE league. Who coming back from injury could I snag as a sleeper? Well, I don't think that Charlotte is much of a sleeper. I don't know that there's anybody emerging from injury outside of her that you should really be picking up. Maybe Asuka ahead of time, just in case. I'm sure she'll get some sort of push whenever she's ready to come back. Any idea what's going on with Britt Baker? Is it a situation similar to Ricky Starks? I haven't heard that it's similar to that. Will Wardlow ever appear on AEW TV again? Yeah, he will. He's been injured for quite a while. Are arenas exclusive to AEW or WWE? I noticed WWE or that AEW goes to Prudential Center and nobody else does. AEW doesn't usually have exclusivity. WWE will usually try to pay a little extra and work some of that in. For example, WWE had exclusivity on the former Staples Center, the Crypto.com arena. Then they sort of abandoned their exclusivity to go to the Intuit Dome. And I can tell you that people at the Crypto.com arena weren't too thrilled about that. And they pretty quickly worked out the deal with AEW to come there for Revolution. Are there any almost stories you thought for certain were going to happen this past year, i.e. Shane showing up on AEW? Well, I did think that Shane would show up eventually at some point in AEW. I also thought that The Rock would probably just push through and do that world title match. That's what I thought. Do you see WWE getting a simulcast deal for SmackDown to answer AEW with Dynamite? No, they are locked into the SmackDown deal. That is a deal for the next number of years. Unless USA Network gets a simulcasting streaming like platform type of thing. Like, for example, if Universal comes to terms with like Peacock or Hulu or somebody like that and has USA Network streaming on it, then WWE could come along and say, well, you know, we'll add this to a part of our deal, because that is a rights fee deal that's a little bit separate than something like that. How far is Eddie Kingston from returning? Eddie Kingston's injury was like really, really bad. Like, he had to have surgery and it was a lot of tears and breaks, I believe. And that was at mid-May, I think it was. So I would say we're still probably looking at a few months. Since they were backstage last night, might as well ask where the most likely places for Corbin and AJ Francis to sign, stay with next year. I think Corbin will probably work some indies. I think he'll probably get some New Japan work. I think that AJ Francis will probably get re-signed by TNA. They understand his value there. He's working out really, really well. Notice on Saturday night's main event that Kevin Owens is billed at 242 pounds as after years of being billed at 266. This comes after Randy Orton's weight was updated when he came back from injury the size of a truck, yet someone like Strowman is still listed at 385, which he says he hasn't been for years. Any insight on how the call is made to update the weights or how often those weights are actually accurate? Rarely are they accurate in WWE. They're usually pretty accurate in AEW and other companies that have tried to normalize it. The story I always tell is that EC3 did an interview with me and he was listed as 246 pounds. And he said, man, I have never been over 225 pounds in my life. And I have told those people, stop announcing me at that weight. I'm jacked. If people can't tell that I'm jacked, why do we need to lie about that weight? And then somebody went in on his Wikipedia and added 6 more pounds to it anyway. Go figure. But yeah, it's just the thing WWE has long done to make them seem larger than life. Hi, Sean, who would you feud MJF with now, presuming the Cole stuff is finished? Oh, I'd get to the finish line on this Death Riders stuff as quickly as possible. And with the Death Riders, you have Pac, Claudio, Yuta, Moxley. You have You have Rated FTR. They need a fourth. And I have long said, when you've got somebody who is ruining, quote unquote, AEW, the faces need somebody who can out motherfucker somebody like Moxley. And honestly, I think that Copeland would probably lean on Christian, but I think that MJF is an okay option as well. But do you want to go pseudo babyface with him? I don't know. But the more I think of it now, honestly, at Copeland recruiting Christian being like, do you ever want this shot at a title? Because if so, you're going to have to just swallow your pride and help us out. I think that would work. With MJF, somewhere completely fresh. Somebody with the Elite or Okada or something like that. Just something new. SRS, going into the new year, do you have any resolutions? Yeah, a lot. I'm going to take better care of myself, physically, mentally, leaving a lot of negativity in 2024. But I want to expand Fightful. I've always talked about Fightful Select Espanol and some things like that that I would like to move on. But I want to produce some more videos for Fightful, or have more videos produced in that sense. Not necessarily like any certain other channel out there, but I want some more to cover some histories of wrestling, video games, some more longer form stuff that, you know, maybe I'll do voiceovers for. But like when I just talked about the history of the NWA since it rebooted 8 years ago, I think that'd be a cool one. Also, some just some fun, different things that I think that Fightful would do really, really well at. I also want to, first off, get our Instagram unhacked. If anybody can help us with that, that'd be great if anybody's got a connection there, because we don't have Threads either. But I want to step up our Reels, our TikToks, and all that. Want to get into the reactions game, not me personally, but want to find somebody for our team that can, you know, do the live reaction streams, and then also, you know, produce videos associated with those, put them on Instagram, TikTok, and the like. So a lot of things like that that I want to grow with. Do you think the Rhea Liv Last Woman Standing match will be the end of the feud? It needs to be. It is time to move on. This should not continue through Royal Rumble or WrestleMania or anything like that. What happened to Tribute to the Troops? Just quietly went away. It was largely a Vince McMahon thing, and it changed pretty heavily. Now, granted, the U.S. was, you know, pretty active in war then, and it's something that JBL and Vince McMahon both wanted to do and was very important to them. And gosh, I want to say the first 7 years they went to Iraq 6 years and Afghanistan 1 year, and it was a December tradition. Then instead, they would go to like Fort Hood, the Norfolk Scope, you know, a lot of places like that, as opposed to the active war scenes. There was 1 year they didn't even televise it. They still did one in the pandemic from the Thunderdome. But really, the last couple of years, I mean, they moved it out of December 1 year. I think they filmed it in mid-October, and they filmed it in mid-November, and they just quietly did away with it after 20 years. I wouldn't say canceled. They just didn't run one this year. So, yeah, it kind of came and went and just hasn't been a thing. Now, I'm sure that eventually, if they see the benefit of doing one, then they'll do one. When and if the Hurt Syndicate expands, who would you like to see in it, and who would be a good fit? Well, I just reported that Kevin Knight's deal is coming up with New Japan. I think he'd be a good fit for that Cedric Alexander role. Leo Rush, if you want another person who can talk and can compete, plus his history with Bobby Lashley, that would be really, really great. Plus, you know, there was some interest there. Maybe the Rizzler would be good. How was the reception to Ospreay Okada, especially towards Ospreay for his performances last night? I mean, obviously the matches were received very well. There were some people that I talked to that sort of shared my sentiment. A couple wrestlers that were watching our post show said, yeah, we thought it would be a much longer match too. Still a phenomenal match. I mean, Will Ospreay, everybody knows he is on just a different level, just a completely different level right now. But yeah, there were a lot of people surprised the show ended that early. Do I think that the venue that New Japan used for Strong Style Evolved would be a good place for AEW to use? So that, I think it's the Walter Pyramid that they used. And they did like, I want to say 2,500 or so there. I would say no, not with the current configuration. Not easy to light it. And also there are, I believe, bleacher sections. And I do not know why venues still create bleacher sections in, or have them in 2025. I mean, maybe it's been adjusted, but I remember seeing some of those shots and it looked like they still had bleacher sections there. And my God, just sucks. You don't necessarily want a place where you can see the ceiling as well. Matthew Hooks of Hooked in Voiceovers, a sponsor of the Fightful Awards presented by NordVPN, says, have you ever see or do you ever see OVW becoming exclusive developmental territory for a promotion again? Obviously not WWE, since they already have their own. I wouldn't say it's impossible. They are always ambitious in that sense, but OVW got that because WWE selected it, and they selected it largely because of connections to that area and people that were close to that area and the like. It's Louisville, Kentucky is not nearly as convenient a scene or location as it was 25 years ago in pro wrestling. Like, listen, I love my area. I love Lexington, Cincinnati, Louisville, Indianapolis, all that stuff. But it's just not a hot wrestling area anymore. And a lot of that has to do with commission regulation and all that. And because OVW has the benefit of, you know, pretty much being the top dog as far as that goes, they don't have any real motivation to loosen up regulation and then bring more indies locally and then as a result grow the area from an independent standpoint. I will say it's at least centrally located to where if you had a developmental talent, they lived there and they needed to get out to, you know, any number of other places, it's easy to do that. There's airports all over the place, especially from Louisville. Like, my God, you can get anywhere within like an hour or two to one of those airports. But I don't think that they'll do that. They definitely won't be for WWE. I know they have pitched it for AEW in the past. They have been for TNA in the past, but TNA is not in a position to have that. When do you think we'll see Kenny in AEW again after he comes back from Japan? Well, I don't expect to see him Wednesday unless they pull off something or he leaves right after, because he was supposed to leave on January 1st. But I would hope the next week. Or maybe, so for example, he wrestles this weekend. I would like to see him on maybe the following week's Collision or the January 15th episode of Dynamite. Maybe have him in a backstage interview segment or something like that in the meantime. How is, was New York? Listen, man, I'm bad at vacationing. I'm really, really bad at it. I got to go spend some time with some people that matter to me, my wife, as well as Destiny FOMO, who's been a good friend of mine for years. Got to see some cool things, but I like being home. I originally aspired for this job because I was like, okay, I can work from home, and I really like that. That's better for me from a personal standpoint. And I have, as a result of this job, I have been blessed to travel to so many wonderful places. But I like being home, man. I like meeting so many of you, but I also do like being home. Alex says, Sean, how did you like the WWE MSG house show? What was your favorite match? Really liked Rollins and Dom Mysterio. WWE Christmas show is always my favorite of the year. I actually liked Wyatt Six and Final Testament because there was some comedy mixed in there, but I did really like the CM Punk, the Seth Rollins Dominic Mysterio match. That was really good, where Dominic got on the mic and buried the city's chicken tenders. I romanticized that December 26th show for so long. And it's so funny because I've always thought of it and just thought, oh, well, of course they do the holiday tour there. They really didn't do it there when I was like really, really young very often. Like, I know they did it in 98, and you know, they had like Rock versus Triple H and Undertaker versus Kane, but no like big shows. But I will say this, not having Rhea Ripley, not having Rey Mysterio, not having Drew McIntyre on that show definitely hurt. It definitely, like, it could have had some more star power. And there were some empty seats in that house. Like, I was shocked by that as well. Like, it was not full by any stretch of the imagination. And I do think that with, you know, a few more names like that, it probably could have been. Hey, Sean, is there anything to rumors about the pitched Logan Paul Cena match at Mania being met with derision from Creative? I haven't even heard that it was pitched for Creative. They've had a pretty good idea of the direction for Cena for, gosh, at least the last month and a half, 2 months. And, I mean, I've been hinting at it pretty heavily on the Raw show. Like, I think it's going to be Cena and Cody. That's what I think. Alicia says, when do we think the transfer window will be officially done? Hell if I know. I wonder if they know. This is one of those things that that I wish that they probably, one of the callbacks to the Vince era. Well, here's a wild card. Here's this. Here's that. Man, it was just in the damn brand split if that were the case. Just get rid of it. And I used to be a real stickler for that. I used to get, you know, really dug into from people because I was a stickler for the brand split, but they don't give a damn about it. They don't. Do you think Drew costs Roman at the Netflix premiere and we get Drew versus Roman at Mania? No, I think we're getting Roman and CM Punk at Mania. Who is your pick to win the Rumble? On the men's side, I think it's John Cena, and I think it is pretty clear in that sense that it's John Cena, and it should be. On the women's side, I think a heel, Bianca Belair, would be fantastic. Or you have an NXT talent win it. I mean, you know, one of the four or five great in-ring talent they have there now, like Zaria, Julia, Stephanie, Roxanne, any of them, I think would be good. And then you can have them challenge, you know, Nia or whoever. And you'll always be able to say, wow, an NXT talent won the Royal Rumble. Anything can happen in the Royal Rumble, yada, yada, yada. I think that goes such a long way. Do you think Becky returns next Monday, or do you think WWE holds off till the Rumble or another Raw? I do think that she comes back next Monday. I don't have anything to say that she will, just to be clear. But WWE kind of does like to be heavy-handed and say, well, you know what? You should tune in because this person's probably going to be there, and they've included her in a lot of advertising and stuff. Could you ever see Paul Heyman being an advocate for someone in the women's roster? I could. I just think that they won't throw just anybody with Paul Heyman now. They tried that with Cesaro and Ryback and Curtis Axel, and it didn't work. Any updates on Rush and Jurassic? Yeah, they were supposed to beat the Acclaimed and go on to Full Gear, but they had some heat on them for a situation that unfolded where they had a match with Alec Price and Richard Holiday, and Richard Holiday was being checked on by a medic. I don't know necessarily the details behind that, but they got physical with him and during the match or around the match, and it didn't end up going well. They got some heat for it. I've seen it reported that press was handed media scrum questions to ask at World's End. Please end this dumb Twitter conspiracy. The dumbest of the dumb are spreading. I can tell you this. Of the dozens of media scrums that I have been to, the probably over 100 pressers and the like, I have never seen anybody get handed a question or fed a question. I have never seen anybody provided questions like that, and that would have emerged from media as opposed to some donk on Twitter that's lying about shit. Hey, Sean, happy new year. Wondering, is Kiera Hogan still with AEW ROH? Yeah, she is for contractually. She had been dealing with a shoulder injury. She hasn't wrestled in about 8 months. I like this last one. Is there any real chance the Cena retirement tour could be an angle so he can break the championship record and go on one final short run as a heel by turning on Cody in the main event at Mania? I would buy the shit out of a just give up evil Cena shirt. I mean, it is a retirement tour, but it's going to last all year long. It's not like wrapping up at WrestleMania. He's wrestling next year. He's going to win that damn title, guys. I'm here for it, too. As a guy who did not like John Cena's work or the push or anything when I was younger, I respect that guy immensely, and I want to see him break that record. Guys, thank you all so much. Till next time, we're out.